Hello and welcome to the live Q&A 32. Can you believe it, Andrew?
We've done 32 of these.
Well, not yet. People... We've done 30. The pedantry is live and well. We're starting our 32nd stream. How are you doing today, Andrew?
I'm doing great. I wanted to stop with the fantastic. Not because I don't.
Big
I don't
news, love... everyone! Breaking news: Andrew no longer fantastic.
Not because I don't love doing the show, and not because I don't love that as a catchphrase. I want to acknowledge like what I've said in social media, and I want to say on this thread, like yesterday's show was like super fucking hard, right? And it was hard on me, and I know it was hard on you, Thomas. And I would love to sort of hear your thoughts, right? Like, it's hard to do a legal show when it feels like the world's on fire. And like, it's tough on me. I know it's tough on you. Share your thoughts, man.
Yeah. My thoughts are that, I don't know what people expect. You know, there are a lot of people who focus on the looting and the whatever. And I don't know what would you expect for, as an example, black people to do in this country, you know, like they're okay. So they're protesting being murdered by police. You don't like it when they kneel. You don't like it when they, whatever, you know, any number of peaceful protests, nothing changes. Do any number of those. And then they also expect, like, if there's a huge injustice and there are demonstrations, apparently the minute anyone causes a ruckus, then you've somehow that delegitimizes the cause. And that's what bothers me. I always want to frame it another way. Would you expect, like, take for example any cause, and I think this is one where like Republicans are, even the video was so bad and so blatant that even Republicans were coming out, you know, against this police officer. So like, for any cause, should you expect that when a bunch of people demonstrate, everything will go totally hunky dory? There will be no problems of any kind. Every like burned anything, every broken glass will be like a good target and a legitimate thing. It's unreasonable to expect that's going to be the case.
So what is hard is that, and this is the right wing's playbook, right? Is that they have co-opted what is a facially reasonable statement, right? So it please listen to hear me out on all of this. It is facially reasonable to say, as a statement into the void, you should protest, you should demonstrate, but you should not be violent, right? Mm-hmm. And if I were talking to my friends, right, upper class white people, what you should do, like, again, don't take legal advice from a podcast. That's 100% what I would say, right? You should protest. You should get involved. You should not get violent. That's great advice for white people. And the problem is that, like, we have spent in the history of this country delegitimizing peaceful protests by black people. And I can document it. We can talk about Colin Kaepernick. Like, and look, like, I mean, we had Chris Cluey on the show, right? Like, we've been out, you know, wherever white people can be on this. We try to be allies. We try to be there, but like, you know, but we're not. Right. And you know, I want to say I actually got a side question about this. Like, my last name is Torres. Right. So I got questions about having a Hispanic background. And I will tell you that, like, it's my dad's side of the family that is the Torres side. Right. That's how I get the name. Right. And but my dad was adopted. And so my grandfather, born in Mexico, my great grandfather never left Mexico. My dad, you know, is a white dude. And like, I grew up a white guy despite the last name. And so I didn't for, you know, diversity and scholarship and all those purposes. And like, you know, like I
yeah, what I, matters I, is how society yeah. perceives you. In the same way that Obama right. is half white, people don't look at Obama, specifically conservatives, don't look at Obama and say, oh, that's a white guy because he's half white. That's just not right. how it works yeah. in society.
And I don't, and I think you said it exactly right, right? Like it is.
I wanted to, sorry, I was kind of in the middle of a process that I was going through. I wanted to say this.
I'm sorry.
One thing that we know too is that conservatives know that the wider media oftentimes will take a negative view of protests the minute there's looting, fires, whatever it is. And so they actually go and help it along. You know, like you see all these videos, it's actually white people, sometimes white supremacists are causing the problems and turning things violent. And by the way, there was one headline that I shared, I think it was on Slate, that really captured it, which was police erupt in violence throughout the country. And I'm so glad this may be the first time that I think it's been properly framed by some people in the media, which is the police are resorting to violence around the country. Police are rioting.
I love that. And I feel like I don't know what the precipitating cause is that, but I feel like this is a moment. This is the way, when I have been talking to people who, you know, may not be show listeners, right, who are sort of across the political spectrum. When I was talking to my family this weekend, what I start with is, boy, the police have lost their shit. The police are overreacting. And I think that that's a good kind of, if you have family members and, you know, you're sort of fighting about this, like, to me, that bit of entree of feels like the police have overreacted.
Yeah, by the way, here's all the videos of police just shooting people with rubber bullets for no reason. And outrageous.
I retweeted out from the opening arguments account, the journalist in Minneapolis who was shot in the eye with a rubber bullet and is now 100% blind in that eye. So, you know, you hear, right, like rubber bullets, right? The Israeli army has been using rubber bullets at the DMZ for decades. Like you hear rubber bullets and it's kind of meant to imply, I don't know, like Nerf guns or it blinded a journalist covering the protests. So, yeah. Anyway, let's do some questions.
Yeah, let's do some questions.
I'm sorry.
There is a note of positivity, I think it is the fact that it does seem to be slowly being framed differently this time. It really does. And I think that'll start to make a difference, especially if people keep it up. Like over time, if we start to frame this as completely absurdly over-militarized police assholes are erupting in violence, over time, if that starts to become how it gets framed, I think it'll make a difference. And I'm glad that it's starting now, even though it's taken a ton of sacrifice, a ton of violence, a ton of, you know, blood and sweat and tears and all that. But all right, we should go to our customary first question.
We're gonna bring this up right now. So
we're never gonna guess who it is. Ready? Hold on. Let's make sure I have the setup. Here we go. It's Teresa
Natasha
Gomez.
Crunchwrap.
Maybe she is Natasha Crunchwrap. I don't know. You never find out Natasha Crunchwrap's true identity. That's part of the mystique. Teresa asks, if you could get a microchip that would be used as currency, would you get one? Is the Nuremberg Code a valid defense against government-mandated vaccines? I've been reading too many comment sections lately. This is all a ploy for Satanists to get your kids. And true to form, I never proofread Teresa's question ahead of time because I trust Teresa. So I'll say whatever she writes. I don't know. Was there a question in there?
If I could get a microchip, like an RFID chip right here.
Oh, especially now where if I didn't have to touch anything.
Yeah. 100%. I'm Mark of the Beast right here on the palm. I'm down.
You know, I recently engaged in a transaction, and in these COVID times, It's places have been specifically In-N-Out, which I, you know, we do like once a week now. They've got it all set up.
You eat more fast food than anyone I know, let alone any skinny person I know.
I used to eat way more fast food. Now it's maybe once every other week. But it's you know, once a week at most for In-N-Out. The problem is it's hard to keep up these days with what we should be, you know, eating and doing. But anyway, they've got it all figured out, and they just have the machine there so that you can stick your card in there and pull it. But there was another place that I bought something, and they had that. And I was like, oh, you got this all set up. Yeah, yep, just, you know, stick the card in there. And then it says, now push OK. And I was like, God, damn it. I can't. And then, like, I was, the and then I had the decision of like,
yep.
Do I grab the, and it was on the touch screen. You know, I was like, do I touch the screen or do I grab the pen to push OK? But then the pen, you know, like either way, it's, so I was like, maybe the screen is like less exposure if I just do this. Yeah.
I've been taking the Clorox wipes in with me to the grocery store and liquor store and, you know, any other place I patronize. And that's what I'll do is I'll use the wipe to grab the pen to push the thing. Do you do Apple Pay? Somebody in the chat was pointing out, like, I don't either. And I feel like I should.
I might have it. There's so much bullshit now. I don't remember what I have and don't have.
I feel like that makes me like cranky old man. Like,
it's possibly
I should be.
I might have the microchip. I should
be able to do the, like, you know, touch, but...
Well, we got our latest card the bank sent us does have that zip, zip, zip thing, but I always forget about it.
Chase has that, but I do the same thing. I'm, like, sticking it in, like, you know, like I'm a goddamn caveman.
Jeez, leave it to Stormy Decisis to have not just one, but two, like, heavily hearted questions, like 20 hearts on one, 24. Stormy Decisis is a question...
We love you, Stormy.
I was searching for a gender neutral term for a like monarch. I was gonna say king or queen, but like, what is there a good one of that? Duke? I don't know. What's a good we need a good like positive gender neutral term like that. Somebody put it in the chat for when you don't know someone's gender.
Isn't regent?
Ooh, a regent.
Gender neutral.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. Question regent. Stormy Decisis. Leave it to Andrew to just pull that one out right away. When he hosted SNL near the Ides of March, John Mulaney joked Julius Caesar was such a powerful maniac that all the senators grabbed knives and stabbed him to death. That'd be an interesting thing if we brought that back now. As a comedy lawyer, what's a joke you've heard told in public by someone who isn't your client that made you think, I would have advised against that? Oh, good question.
I love that. I also like the qualifier of by someone who isn't your client, as if newly proud Papa Eli Bosnick is not my client. I'll say it this way. Let me say it this way. So one of the cool things about defamation law, and we riffed on this a little bit last night. I've talked about this at live shows. Defamation requires that the statement be false. So I'm not the only.
It's a true statement that we should bring back the tactics of. definitely true.
I'm going to get to that in a second. Right. So I'm not the first defamation lawyer to think of this, but. But I like to think that I'm popularizing it in a way. So one of the great things is the more that you use outrageous insults to describe somebody, the more that's like not a statement that is capable of being true or false. So if I say, you know, person X is a murderer, that is a statement that is capable of being proven true or false. If I say, person X is a scumbag.
Well, this isn't really a defamation thing.
No, right? I know. Okay. I'm starting to get there. So
we got lots of questions. I'm trying to. I don't want to do a deep dive on each one.
So, but here's the thing, Stormy. That like sitting on top of that is that statements that would be perfectly ordinary statements about public figures become triggers for the NSA and for the Secret Service when it could potentially be construed as a threat against the president or vice president. And so I don't think it should be that way, right? Like, I think you should be free to make whatever jokes you want about the president, particularly when they're obviously jokes. But I would not be doing my job as a lawyer if I did not tell my clients that certain things are very likely to run afoul of executive agencies that are aggressive about wiretapping, serving subpoenas, and so forth. And I don't want to go any further than that because that could expose Thomas and I to liability and to potential monitoring.
That's a bold joke. I didn't know he made that. I do think that's
a bold motherfucking joke.
It probably will show a gender difference that we have in this country in that what's her name did the severed head photo, which was obviously not Trump's real head, everybody.
Kathy Griffin.
Yeah,
Kathy Griffin.
Yeah. And she had a hell of a time after that. And I wonder, you know, of harassment and you know, not just from citizens, but from the actual Secret Service and all that. And I wonder how it will be when a man does that. I think it'll anyway.
That's interesting.
Want to point out, by the way,
those things weigh heavily on me. Yeah, go ahead.
We've got some fantastic suggestions for monarchs, which is just monarch. That works. Someone says that a regent is when the monarch is not of age, so that wouldn't really...
Correct. Yeah, oh, no, that's... Yeah. Right. That regent really is I'm acting in charge. Okay. Yeah, so...
That's fine. Monarch's good. We got baron. Is a baron... No, because baron and baroness, right? That's not... That doesn't work.
Nope.
That's still gendered.
The baroness. Oh, my God. Like,
baroness
that
is
was,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about when you don't know someone's gender.
I think that we need good terms for this. It'll create good habits. Let's see. Sovereign
like regent,
is not bad. Ruler. Emperor. But they also have empress, though. Sometimes I can never decide. Like, it, you know?
Empress sounds weird. Anyway. All right. We got more questions, right? Don't we have another stormy question? We do have another stormy question.
Yeah. Jeez, look at Andrew emceeing all of a sudden. Took it personally when I said he took too long. Stormy Decisis, the
Who's
monarch
that?
Of question monarch, says, Andrew takes the bar exam. I'm talking to my attorney about my many crimes, as I often do, when the Grubhub guy arrives with our crime pizza. While he's in the room, I switch to talking in Cantonese, a language the attorney and I both speak fluently, and which I assume the Grubhub guy doesn't know. However, I made an incorrect classist assumption about the Grubhub guy, who's actually a polyglot fluent in Cantonese. Is what I said to my lawyer in Cantonese privileged? There's multiple choice, but I'm just going to have you take it.
Oh, I can. I have the YouTube link up, so I can actually see the question.
But I'd rather just answer it.
I do not. I think you have a great argument that that is still privileged, right? So so Stormy is
because it's an expectation of privacy.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Right. So here's the thing, right? It is well known, and Stormy like just assumed we don't even need to talk about this on OA. Like you people know, having a third party in the room breaks attorney-client privilege. But I think that the issue would be analyzed under expectation of privacy rules. And if you switch to a coded method of communication and Cantonese, like in the United States, like that qualifies in my view as a coded communication. Otherwise, right? Like, look, imagine it this way, right? Take the question and instead of it being Cantonese, say, I close the door, but you know, the third party listens with a glass, you know, you'd be like, well, I didn't expect they were going to do that. I thought I had an expectation of privacy. Therefore, I was communicating privileged information. And that expectation really is sort of the key on maintaining privilege is I thought I was talking to my lawyer in a way that was protected. So I think you're good. And
all right,
let me know that this sounds oddly specific, Stormy. So, you know, if you got some real problems, you know, shoot me an email.
I just realized I didn't publish the link on Patreon because I'm a bad person in every way. Sorry about that. So now I've posted it, and hopefully that maybe some more. We got a lot of people, but
yeah, we do.
I feel bad that if patrons were relying on that. Sorry, later patrons listening in the future who hear this now.
Ooh, Liz, all right. Our buddy Liz Weeks, practicing video game attorney, says she thinks the privilege is waived. I disagree with you, Liz. I gotta say, I think switching to an obscure language that you have every reason to believe that the third party in the room doesn't know is the equivalent of closing the door, and I will knife fight you on that.
Interesting. Is it almost like if you switch to, like, if you say you were radioing to your lawyer and you're like, I'm going to switch to a channel, an encrypted channel, and then little do you know, someone is scanning channels and can somehow decrypt it. It's kind of like that. Like, you expect that no one else can hear it.
It is that the law governing privilege is has two components to it. It is, do you expect that it is privileged? And did you take measures to ensure that that was the case? And I think switching to Cantonese covers it. So that's where I am.
All right. Let's see here. Well, here's one. I'm not sure how you'll be able to answer this, but it's got a lot of hearts, so people want to know. CU asks, is there any case law or legal precedent about agent provocateurs from police departments if they initiate or start a riot, etc.? I mean, you're not going to know off the top of your head.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So I assume it's like pretty much all the police abuse we talked about yesterday, which is, sure, there are laws against it. Whoa. Was that for the people with the 3D glasses on?
Yeah.
Sure, there are laws against all of this stuff, but it's a question of if they're going to be enforced, I take it?
I think it's both, right? So I think the question is, Is there something that specifically protects police officers? I don't know. But what indirectly protects police officers is the fact that their testimony is granted additional weight. So,
what am I hearing? Did everybody hear that?
I don't know.
I heard some water or something. Somebody pouring it. Did you spill something? Anyway, maybe it's just me. Could be my brain. All right. Well, then let's go to another question. Sorry, I just wanted to try since I had so many hearts. Let's see.
Yeah, I wish I could answer.
Well, here's one slightly related, but, you know, maybe slightly different. Given all, AB asks, given all of the police misconduct that's been in the news recently, what legal approaches or reforms do you think will be the most helpful toward curbing police misconduct?
Yeah, so we
again policy question, like it's kind of tough for you, but it's not really our area.
But we talked about that last night. Like, I think that part of what comes into play there is just public transparency, right? So the more people know, so I'm 100% behind efforts both at the state level and at the federal level to have mandatory body cameras. And a shout out to Peter Gerdes, who I know is in the chat. We elided over this last night. I said this, but I didn't make it explicit, and I think he did a great job of sort of parsing it directly. I said on the chat, there are no federal police forces. That's true. So when the federal government tells the states, hey, you should have your police departments, you know, wear body cameras, the way in which you do that is you condition federal aid on the wearing of body cameras, right? So that was, I elided over it on yesterday's show, and I shouldn't have. So Peter had, I think, a really good distinction with respect to that. And that's, so to me, that's my answer. And I want to talk about this a little bit more generally. Like, when the exclusionary rule was crafted, the reason for crafting the exclusionary rule, which says that if the police illegally seize something from your property or your person, that evidence is excluded at trial. The dissent in those early line of cases basically said, like, look, you should allow the evidence to be admitted at trial and then allow the person who was the victim to sue afterwards, right? And the Supreme Court kind of correctly recognized, like, yeah, the problem is you take somebody who's innocent, the police violate their rights, they fabricate evidence, they get a conviction, and now you're a convicted felon trying to sue the police from prison.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a really great remedy, right? The appropriate way to deter police misconduct is to say, you're doing this to make your case, and we're not going to let you make your case with that. And so, so I'm a big fan of, and I think that analysis is correct. I'm a big fan of crafting legal solutions that say you can't make your case with X. So that's my way of kind of generally answering that question.
All right. Here's one that a lot of people want to know the answer to. Bird Lawyer Esquire asks, Andrew, if Justin Walker is elevated to the D.C. circuit and you end up with an appeal before him, would you move to disqualify him from the case based on your debate and public criticism of him?
So short answer, I would so move to disqualify Justin Walker from any case. And look, like, he's going to be appointed to the D.C. circuit. I practice in D.C. Like, I'm going to have a case.
I thought he already was. I lost track of that all. Is he not?
Yeah, no,
his
they had his hearings, his whole 2 hours of vetting, thanks to Mitch McConnell. There's so much that you can get out in 3 minutes of questioning from every member of the Senate Judiciary Committee. Short answer, I would move to have him disqualify himself. He would refuse to recuse himself, and he'd be within his discretion to do so, right? He would just say, I attest that I will be, you know, open and even-handed and fairly and impartially adjudicate this case. And there's literally nothing I can do about it. So,
sounds right.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
Morgan says you're going to have to send her instead.
I'm listening to this. Yeah.
Or me. I'll go. No,
yeah,
I'd be way worse. Okay, doofus. So here's my oral arguments to all the honorable judges and doofus douchebag over here. I wouldn't be able to.
Yeah, 100% I'm going to send Morgan instead.
Instead of me? Oh, damn. All right, well.
Instead of me.
I can't fault you for that.
That's going to be a fun conversation with my client. It'll be like the Lionel Hutz, like, well, Judge Walker has had it in for me ever since I accidentally backed over his child.
Sorry, I'm fixing my chair. Oh, there we go. I'm so much taller now. Way taller. Sitting up straight. I know people complain from time to time they don't sit up straight, but I don't sit up straight, so sorry. So let's see, where do we want to go here? You know, this one, I'm curious about your answer to this. Sakashite Fukusumi doesn't listen to CogDisc because I'm faint of heart. My heart is very faint, asks. Realistically, what odds do you put on Donald Trump ever seeing the inside of a prison cell?
Wow. Great question. Not zero. Can I take that answer and move on?
Not zero.
Look, I vacillate, right? Because there was a strong movement on the Democratic left in 2008 that really, really wanted war crimes to be brought against George W. Bush, against Condoleezza Rice, against everybody who was involved in and let's be 100% clear about this, in committing a war crime, right? In going to the United Nations and sending Colin Powell to point at a fucking baby formula factory and go, this is a chemical weapons plant, when they knew it was not. Okay. So I'm sensitive to that. I think you know where I come down in terms of facts. It did not surprise me that Barack Obama said, out of unity, I'm not going to bring war crimes charges against the last president. I think that's probably Joe Biden's temperament, right?
Yeah.
You look at the entire Iran.
Hey, maybe if he picks Liz, maybe they can get on the truth and reconciliation, you know, bandwagon for the last administration or something.
But I also think, I think there's a counter force against that, right? So look, that is, you said odds. 90%+ is, I'm Joe Biden. I'm an old white dude compromise candidate. I want a return to normalcy. We just got to put this mess behind us. That's Joe Biden. That is the bulk of everything. That is what you should bet on. But the more extreme Trump's behavior becomes. And look, it's still May, right? Like, we've got to get all the way to November. We've got half a year left in front of us of an increasingly desperate
game show. But the crimes have already been committed.
No, I agree with that. But what I'm saying is the
more... I mean, not all of the crimes.
Yeah, right. But I'm saying the more egregious his behavior becomes, the easier it is to say, I want to get a criminal conviction from an impartial jury because I want to prove to the American people that this is not just partisanship, right? This is not just I'm a Democrat taking over and like Trump was a monster. This is no. Like, he committed crimes and we're going to let that work its way through the criminal justice process. I would say I never go above like 5%. But sometimes I get as low as like microscopic levels and I'm on the upswing. So I'm going to say, 3% right now. I'm picking that out of my head.
I have questions about this. For one, I think it would take not just an act of omission, but an act of commission or whatever we kind of talked about last time.
Yep.
Because I feel like if you just let the wheels of justice go on the stuff that we still don't have the answers to, like documents and, Deutsche Bank and tax returns and all that, you could be a Joe Biden and say, well, I'm not going after Donald Trump, but we will also not stop any investigations that are pending or arise as a result of these new released information. And I feel like he's committed some crimes. Now, whether he'd actually see jail time, I don't know, but.
Well, and remember that the precedent that has been set is Gerald Ford a handpicked successor to Richard Nixon saying, I think it's important that the country heal, that we not, prosecute Richard Nixon. And so you should be skeptical of that. You should be as skeptical of that as if, this were reversed and, Hillary Clinton were being impeached for fraud and Tim Kaine were like, I want to urge us to heal as a nation. You'd be like, no, screw that. Like, Hillary Clinton committed crimes. Let's prosecute her ass for those crimes. So I want to identify sort of what the cultural and political zeitgeist is, which is you don't go after the person that just got voted out of office. But as you point out, and I agree, like, these are different times. So that's what I'll go with.
I was deeply involved in that question. I've got to browse for another one now. Someone's asking about that document doctoring story, but you've already told that like 3 times, but it does have 14 hearts. All right. Why not? The people want to know. Andrew, you recently mentioned you had a case in which a document was doctored by opposing counsel. Wow, can you tell us more about that story? Is that behavior likely to get a lawyer disbarred, or is it no big deal as long as they don't misuse client funds while they're committing forgery? I like it. I think that the questioner's in on that joke. You've told it, but what the hell? It had a lot of hearts. Tell it again. It was a date, right? Or a document where they subbed in the signature that was a, right? Something like that?
Yeah, this was a dispute over the ownership of a business, and the other side. I was at a temporary restraining order hearing, right? So here are the facts. I represented a small business where the founder had was a Russian national who had emigrated legally to the United States, was brought over here by his cousins, right? And so when my client, who you know had a medical degree from Russia, came over here, started a physical therapy business, and brought his cousins into the business as 50% owners. Came to the office one day and discovered on the floor a little flyer that said, hey, and I'm going to obscure a little bit of the details here, but, you know, hey, if you come to our, you know, Kankakee office, then that's 50% off. And the only problem was he had two offices. Neither of them were in Kankakee, right? So he looked at it and he was like, what the hell is that? Went and took the flyer, drove down. And what the cousins had done was replicated the entire business in another location and were redirecting clients, being like, hey, you know, you come in here, we could see you today. But if you go to the Kankakee office, it's 50% off. That's not a thing that you're allowed to do. Ultimately, yeah. You know, we got him a tremendous cash settlement from the other side. But early on, the other side, I was at a temporary restraining order hearing, and what I was trying to do was close the Kankakee office, right? And I went in and I said, look, like, they're members of this business. It is competing with this business over here. This is clearly fraudulent. Judge, you should shut it down. And they introduced a document that purported to say, from my guy, that said, hey, it's totally okay for you to open an office in Kankakee. And that got introduced in the middle of my TRO hearing, which, you know, that comes in the outset, right? Like, we filed the complaint 3 days later. We had our TRO hearing. That's the way it moves, right? Like, when you need injunctive relief, it goes super quickly. And they put this document in front of me, and I looked at it, and I said, Your Honor, I've never seen this document before. But, you know, and I made my best arguments about it. But the judge was like, well, kind of looks like your client let him set up this office, so injunction denied. And they got to keep their office open. Wow. And then I turned around and I found my client. I was like, dude, not cool to sandbag me at our injunctive relief hearing. Like, yeah. Why didn't you tell me? And he looked at me and said, Andrew, I never, ever, I don't know what this document is. I never signed it. I never created it. And like, again, as a lawyer.
Yeah, you're like, all right, buddy.
Hear that all the time. Right. Skeptical. I was like, okay, yeah, exactly. And then what we did, and he insisted, and what we did was we went through every document he's ever signed and wow. found the one. And I just pulled them up on my computer screen, and we found the one where, like, his signature – like, if this were a 1990s hacker movie, right? Like, you'd slowly merge the signatures over each other.
Yeah, enhance.
Yeah, enhance.
Yeah.
Move in. Zoom in on quadrant four. It was clear that what somebody had done was they razored out his signature, wrote a document, slapped it on there, photocopied it, and gave it to the court. Now, the question, and was this Sakashite Fukasumi? Who was it that asked this question?
I already don't remember.
Whatever. No, whoever it was, a longstanding friend of ours who asked the question. I could not, And I did not care about proving whether the other side's lawyers did that or whether the other side lied to their lawyers and did that. I have my suspicions, but I'm going to keep them to myself because this is a public broadcast. But I will tell you that was incredible. Like, that was the...
Yeah, what's the first step you take? You crack the code in the hacker movie. You see this is a forgery.
Yeah.
What's the first step you take?
I had to hire a document expert because it doesn't do me, Andrew Torres, any good to just say, like, oh, the signatures kind of look the same. Huh. So I hired an expert witness and I said, look, like, here's the situation. I want to pay you as little as possible. What are you going to charge me? And I believe the guy charged me $500. I'm like, look, I just want to sign. I want to draft everything up. You sign your name to something that says nobody signs their name the exact same way twice. Right.
Yeah.
And I have looked at these two signatures. They're exactly the same. It is my expert opinion that that's a forgery. Right. And so I moved for sanctions. Right. So I filed a motion for sanctions pursuant to the court's inherent authority. I asked for a lot of stuff that we didn't get. But we did get the cost of the expert witness and the cost of litigating the sanctions motion. This is the second time. Morgan is still in the chat, so she and I won a major sanctions motion a couple months ago. So yeah, it's rare. Like, I don't know too many lawyers who have won.
They call
this
him
twice.
The Sanction King,
Mr. Sanctions. There we go, and Ms. Sanctions. Morgan helped out a ton on that. So anyway, that was the approach that I used. I went to the judge. I said, "I want sanctions. This document is bullshit." I want an official court ruling that this is bullshit. I want all the money that we spent on this. And then I said, and I want, you know, declaratory relief on our complaint, which we didn't get. But we got those first two things. So, nice. And that absolutely drove every pleading from then on out, right? You know, this is a Thomas Takes the Bar Exam kind of thing. Every pleading from there on out, I was like, well,
hey, remember that time?
Seriously, it featured in every.
Oh, I would never stop that. Every single. Well, unless there's any more new crazy documents we're going to find out, then
I did that nonstop.
I would have milked it a lot until the judge nudged me to not do it anymore. Yeah. Here's a question, and I have some thoughts on as well. Oh. No, not that one. Here we go. Orjan Sali or something. You have both been outspoken against voting third party because in the first past the post, winner takes all political system. Splitting your voter base is suicidal. What would need to change for smaller parties to be viable? I have some thoughts. Give me first crack at this
one. Give me yours. What are yours?
So I recently read an article about some potential reforms that'll probably never happen, but I found it interesting. I was trying to get Andrew to take a look at it maybe, but we'll see. Maybe later date. But anyway, one thing would be there are a lot of potential reforms for like the Senate and the House, you know, to try to get around gerrymandering and actually with the Senate to try to get around the small state unfair advantage they have. And I think it was something like you would vote by party rather than by candidate, and the parties would then get senators in proportion to their total popular vote or something like that. And it was one of those reforms that they talked about. Where they said, you know, this would also have the advantage of making third parties more worthwhile, because if you vote by party like that and it's, you know, the parties get like a, and I think this is kind of how it works in the UK, I want to say, where it's like you vote by party and the parties get seats based on the percentage, then all of a sudden it might make sense to vote third party in some cases, in some districts or whatever, where they might get some representation. But yeah, what pisses me off so much about the people who vote third party now, like present day 2020, is I always say, why not just write in your own name? You know, because if their argument is, I want to vote for the candidate that I agree with, I have the right to vote for the candidate I think is best. And even though you're saying there's no fucking chance in the world that my candidate's going to win, I'm still going to vote for this 30 party candidate. And I always say, just write in your own name. There's statistically the same chance of you winning as there is that third party candidate. It's exactly the same. And I want to bring in too, because I believe, Andrew, you commented this that people have been using the, oh, well, we need to get to the threshold of, you know, 5% or whatever. And so I would love you to give that answer that I saw you comment the other day.
Yeah. Lot to work with there. Yeah. The 5%, if you see anybody, particularly in this election, arguing about the 5% threshold, that's nonsense. There is no magic 5% threshold. And the super easy way to figure this out is to look back to recent third party candidates who got over 5%, and that didn't turn into anything, right?
Yeah, doesn't do anything.
To be clear, right, Ross Perot got, and again, I'm doing this as a cross X. I'm doing this as a Q&A. Didn't know the question in advance. Don't have any evidence up front. I believe Ross Perot got 16% of the vote in 1992.
And I would have said more.
Well, he was way above that until he went crazy.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
He accused George Bush of trying to sabotage his daughter's wedding. And then at said wedding, danced with his daughter-in-law to Patsy Cline's Crazy, which he then turned into a campaign theme. Like, when you say, right, I'm the crazy person, that eats into your support quite a bit. I love Ross Perot. Like, he turned economics lessons and graphs on national television into a 30-minute political campaign commercial. And you know that's close to my geek heart. But look, like, Ross Perot got 16% of the vote in 1992. He got, I think, 9% of the vote in 1996. He ran both times under the Reform Party banner. And where's the goddamn Reform Party now? Nowhere. Yeah. Where was the Reform? Pat Buchanan got the nomination of the Reform Party in 2000 and got, you know, 1% of the vote, right? Like, got exactly the amount that you would expect Pat Buchanan to get, regardless of you know, who was the candidate and regardless of the party. There's no magic 5%. There's no magic, now we start winning congressional races. There's no nothing. That's a lie. It's nonsense. So,
yeah. I would also say this. In Congress, we effectively do have multi-party, but without the name. You know, because we've got the Freedom
Caucus.
Because
we have various,
we've got
caucuses,
mainstream Republicans. Yep. We've got, but, you know, the Progressive Caucus. And we've got, you know, it's essentially multi-party coalitions, but without the name, you know.
What 100%. So, what would I do? I would look to Maine. Like, if you want to crash the system, this is the thing that I don't understand, is that people who want to vote third party will say, the system is rigged against third party candidates, so therefore I'm going to vote for a third party candidate. And I'm like, do you not? Like, where's the cognitive dissonance? Like, you just said, they're not going to listen to me, so God, by God, I'm going to make them listen to me. Like, do you not hear the words coming out of your mouth? If you want the way to begin the process. So the thing you described, which I would be 100% behind, is a parliamentary system. We're a ways from that. But the way in which we start to get there is through ranked choice voting. And you can get that in through your current political parties, because that doesn't jeopardize. So ranked choice voting is, right, it's 2016. I get to say Hillary Clinton won, right? Jill Stein too? No, I don't know. Like, what? I don't, in that presidential election, it's Hillary Clinton won. It's 30 feet of crap. And then, I don't know, Gary Johnson 2, Jill Stein 3, Donald Trump 4, right? Okay. But I get to write that, right? Clinton won. Right. Johnson 2, Stein 3, Trump 4. And they count my vote as a vote for Hillary Clinton. But if I voted Stein 1, Clinton 2, then they would count that as vote for Hillary Clinton. But you would also be able to say, oh, Jill Stein got 7% of the vote or whatever. Right. Like, it eliminates the, I don't want to vote for X candidate because they're going to lose option, without jeopardizing mainstream members of both, you know, the Democrats and Republicans. So, like, to me, if you want to crash the system, that's the mechanism you start with. Is it enough? It's definitely not enough, but that's what you start with in terms of getting everything together.
Yeah, I do want to point out that every single voting system has problems, and there's a there's a possibility with ranked choice you actually can get candidates that nobody wants just based on if the priorities of people are arranged in a certain way, you can get a weird. But I so, overall, it's so much better. I still would
sure because in every right like there has yet to be a system that will solve the like
yeah, it won't
people
solve every
people problem. Prefer A to B and B to C and C to A.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, yeah. That is the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a human psychology problem. So, shout out to Ray Ray in the chat. To me, this is such an obvious way to get like the camel's nose under the tent that like, I don't know why. Well, I do know why, right? Like, because in my view, most national political third parties, and by that I mean the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, they are not seriously interested in grassroots building the kind of long-term change necessary to end the system. They're interested in saying that they're going to do that, but like they obviously don't care about that, because if you did, you would build that from the ground up instead of putting millions of dollars into a pointless presidential race. So if you really want to work towards decades from now having a parliamentary system, support RCV.
I will say, though, if you're a Republican, I think voting third party is such a good idea. It is the greatest thing you could possibly do. Wholeheartedly, I think you should do. Why should you vote for a candidate you don't support? Vote, you know, don't vote for Trump. You don't support him fully. Vote for the third party candidate that you definitely support more than Trump. I think that when people talk about, well, when people on the right talk about voting third party, that's better than being a Trump voter, obviously. So that's fine. When people who are ostensibly on the left talk about it, for me, it's just, well, I know things are bad, but I don't actually want to make them better. I just want to be able to complain about it and then say that the party wasn't perfect enough for me. It bothers me so much that there seems to be, and this is going to be simplified, but I really feel this, that like people are uncomfortable with any sort of absolute or they want to go to absolutes. And there's the absolute of my party is the best, your party is the worst, that a lot of people are comfortable with. And there's the absolute of both parties are bad, which I think is equally stupid. Like, that's just as stupid, but people feel smarter when they can say that. Oh, both party. Look at this example of a Democrat doing something here and this example of a Republican. I think it makes people feel smarter that they're not in the system. You know, like, that means they're somehow above everybody because they can see that both sides are the same. But it's actually just wrong. Like, I think the hardest spot, you know, position to take and the one that I think is accurate is that, yes, Democrats are flawed in many ways. They're also the only fucking possible solution to this current mess. They just are. That's the situation we're in. You don't have to vote Biden and the whole time you're voting be like, he's the best. He's this amazing candidate. You can just vote Biden because it's the better thing to do by a lot.
I couldn't agree with that more. And let me add one more thing on top of that. And this is really going to be hard for our progressive listeners. You and I are very progressive, right? But for some of our, you know, most left-wing listeners to hear. And part of that is you need to figure out where 51% of the electorate is. Idea of like, well, you know, if a candidate doesn't meet like X, Y, Z, A, B, and C, like, I don't know. Like, you can cherry pick individual things, but like, if you take, the most, and again, like Liz Warren was going to have a challenge with this. So let's pick my candidate.
Right? I absolutely think, and it breaks my heart about this, and I'm sure you're in the same position. I would be far more worried about Trump winning if Warren were the candidate right now. More worried about Trump winning. That's my opinion. I think that Biden has a better chance against Trump than Elizabeth Warren did. I absolutely think that.
I will. So let me go off down that kind of.
It doesn't mean
No, I know exactly what you mean.
I think when you're talking about these razor thin margins of every election now, sexism plays a big enough role to cause problems.
Here's what I would say. And we said this on our episode, and again, may be popular, may not be popular. Joe Biden as the nominee says, we as the Democratic Party want this race to be a referendum on Donald Trump. We want this to be, hey, do you not like the last 4 years? And do you want to get back to the stuff that we had before that happened? If so, vote blank Boxman. I mean, Joe Biden. Yeah.
Right? Oh, like, we've got this collector's item in Joe Biden, this relic of a better time.
He's a stand-in for the last Democratic president.
Doesn't he remind you of when things were better?
Remember when we had a black guy who ran the country? Joe remembers, right? Like just like Pepperidge Farm. So yes, right? Like in that sense, the having Joe Biden be the candidate means that the election is focused on the unitary question of, do you support Donald Trump Y/N? Right. And if it's N, you're voting for Joe Biden. And there it is. And absolutely, if Liz Warren were the nominee, because she stands for other stuff, it would not be as clear a question.
For me, it's this crazy thing called polling that I also go by that also shows she would not have as good a chance. And I think what happens is, and this is documented, people perceive women to be more progressive and radical than men. That's why, for some reason, when more people would vote for Bernie Sanders in a general than Elizabeth Warren, probably. And they would do so under incorrect assumptions, I think. They would perceive her as more radical in certain ways because we've seen that bias in polling. It happens.
I'm just going to do 30 seconds. I've talked about this before, but I want to emphasize it again. In virtually every respect, I've been coaching high school debate since 1990, since I graduated from high school. And that's 30 years. Good God, I'm old. My best debaters and I've had very good male debaters. I've had three debaters in the past 30 years who could sort of broadly lay claim to being the best debater in the country. One of whom was my sister, which I'm super proud of. And all three of those were women, and all three of them like were formative in me as a debate coach in learning like how to that the things that I got away with in debate rounds were not things that they could get away with, you know? Yeah. I love that, right? Cause I was, you know, 18 years old and in college and like, you know, coaching debate. And that was a consciousness raising moment to be like, you know, what it is. And, you know, Samantha sometimes is in the chat room here. Samantha was the best debater in the country her senior year. And, she would routinely win major tournaments and, We went to there was an early tournament at Wake Forest, North Carolina, that had a predominance of Southern judges, and like we went year after year we would go, and she'd be going, you know, 6-0 at other tournaments, and she'd go 2-4 at Wake Forest, and it was just like at the end of her junior year, she's like, I'm never going back to that tournament again. And jeez. And she would get like, you know, well, you're kind of rude. It was like the word uppity was on a ballot. Anyway.
All right. Let's try to squeeze in. We're almost out of time, actually. Let's try to squeeze in a few more questions. We're back on the police topic here. That's where I'm going with the hearts. People voted on which questions.
All right.
Originalism is hearsay unless the Constitution counts as an excited utterance. That's pretty good.
Oh, nice.
We could go through our other hearsay exceptions too.
All 23 of them.
Declaration against interest or something? Could it be that?
Statement against interest.
Yeah, statement is against interest. Good one. A dying one, right? What's that one?
Dying declaration.
It should be a dying declaration. I feel like the Constitution is a dying declaration. Can you explain the legal standards around when a cop is or isn't allowed to arrest somebody? It feels like there are all these rules for what constitutes reasonable suspicion for an arrest warrant. But then that all goes out the window if a cop asks someone to do something and they don't instantly fully comply. What level of obligation do we have to obey a cop's orders? I'm going to guess that yelling, "Am I being detained?" is not a get out of jail free card.
All right. So, again, I want to be super careful here, right? Because don't take legal advice from a podcast. And remember, I'm a white lawyer with predominantly white clients talking in an area that I don't practice. Now, in order to arrest you, an officer must have reasonable suspicion. That's the standard. It is a standard. It is below the standard of probable cause. But above, you have a skin color that I don't like, right? What happens in encounters between individuals and the police is that you wind up giving the officer reasonable suspicion when they didn't have it originally. So now let me go to, am I being detained? God help me. Here's the kernel of truth.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you've mentioned that that is a good thing to ask sometimes, right?
Here's the thing. A police officer does not have to tell you what kind of question they are asking you when they are asking you that question. I want to give you an example that you 100% everybody listening, unless we have a lot of people under the age of 16 in the audience, has had, and stuff that I have screwed up. You're driving down the highway. You see the lights flash behind you. You pull over. Cop pulls you over. Walks up to the door. Raps on the door. You roll down the window. What does
am
the
I
cop
being detained?
Say?
That's how I shout right away.
Right. The cop is going to ask you, "Sir, do you know how fast you were going?" Now, Thomas, what's the right answer to that question?
No idea. I don't know.
No,
how fast
the
you
right
tell
answer
me.
To that. The right answer to that question is and. Again,
do you
don't
say,
take
I was driving safely?
The right answer to that question is, officer, I assert my Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination and decline to answer that question. Okay, I get it. None of you are going to say that. None of you are going to do that. But this is what cops do, right? They pull you over. They ask you a question. There is no answer to, do you know how fast you were going? That's going to help you. So don't fucking answer it. Okay.
I was going the speed limit, I think.
Yeah. Right. That is the answer. Right. And also if you get pulled over for a DUI, the answer of, I had two beers with dinner.
Yeah,
right,
I'm not
is
getting
the
pulled
stock.
Over for a DUI.
Yeah. But don't That's do that. Plan. Don't get pulled over for anything.
Nobody right? get pulled but over for a DUI. No, don't drive drunk.
Don't drive drunk. Don't take
Look,
legal advice.
Some light speeding. I'm okay with
some light speeding. What you want to ascertain is, are you in a custodial or a non-custodial interview? And the difference between those two, and here we go with my SovSit friends, is, are you free to leave?
The fringe
Am
on the
I
flag
being
versus
detained?
The fringe on
right?
the flag? Oh,
if you are free to leave, then the questions are voluntary. You don't have to answer them. You can say, hey, is this a custodial interview? If it's non-custodial, I decline voluntarily. I assert my Fifth Amendment privilege. I decline voluntarily to answer your questions. I'm going to leave. If it's a custodial interview, that means they have already reasonable suspicion to arrest. You should say, I'm not going to say, I want my lawyer present. I'm not going to answer anything. So the way in which things escalate is, you're walking down the street. You have done nothing. The cop does not have probable cause to arrest you. He does not even have reasonable suspicion to detain you. But he stops you and asks you a question in a threatening sort of way. And people don't understand that, like, cop asking you dumbass question on the street is different than you're at the station and cop is asking you a question and you can't leave. And so they start to answer, and that's your problem. And when you start to answer, then the cop can say, well, as he was starting to answer, he was fiddling with his pocket and
yeah.
he started to run and he did that. And that gave rise, you know, to my reasonable suspicion to detain and search his pockets.
Yeah,
and
I mean, that's when I discovered. If they can do that, they can make any yeah. fucking bullshit up anyway, right?
It the case law is very clear, right? That reasonable suspicion is not just like, you match the description of somebody we've been looking for, right? Like it has to have, I think the criteria is are articulable facts.
I think the officer just has to use the magic words that he was reasonably suspicious and then it's fine. That's what it seems to be.
I'm giving you the law school.
I want to know if a cop asked me how fast I was going, I should, or do you know how fast you were going? I should just say, yeah. Next question.
You should say, I decline to answer that question and I assert my Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination.
Why do you ask? I do know if I any other stupid questions.
100%. But yeah, so look, like that's how things go wrong because people talk to cops. And the more you talk to cops, the more they have grounds.
Well,
to
when
say,
you talk about, I agree
suspicion.
With you on the, cop on the street.
And asserting your Fifth Amendment right does not give rise. There's the case law is 100% clear, does not give rise to reasonable suspicion. You can say, I declined to answer that question and assert my Fifth Amendment rights. Anything else, officer, or am I free to go?
When it comes to the being pulled over, though, that's all just a bullshit dance anyway, right? Like, no answer to anything matters, does it? Like, what the fuck is it gonna? Are you saying there's a chance, like, if they pulled you over and they didn't have like a good radar reading or something on you, then they can get you to admit the speed you were going? Like, where does that ever factor in?
They absolutely can. And look, like the point about pulling you over and asking you questions is not to try and get a conviction on the speeding, right? It is to pull you over, ask you, and then your eyes are
drunk,
spaced
yeah,
out, and they're like, yeah, exactly. "Oh, yeah."
That's
well,
why I don't think it matters. Like, I really don't think it matters. I've been pulled over. I don't know, 4 or 5 times. I've never, you know, like one time the guy did the. Do you know why I pulled you over? And I was like, "No, no idea." And I've had a few. I think it was a brake light or something. I was like, "I don't know." They're just asking, like you say, they're asking the questions to try to have something else on you. I don't think there's no combination of answers you give that's going to like give you more of a speeding conviction, I don't think. But don't take legal advice from a me.
Yeah.
All right, we're out of time, so we got to go maybe a couple quick lightning rounds.
All right, let's do some lightning rounds.
I've scrolled to the bottom. This one I am actually interested in your take on. Trump is almost literally the mayor from Jaws asks, would you rather see Warren as VP or Senate Majority Leader and why?
I would rather see Warren as VP because not in terms of rebuilding the government, but let me say it this way. I would rather see Warren as VP for a bunch of reasons. Number one, if you're vice president, you can be put in charge of stuff. And I feel like Joe Biden would put Elizabeth Warren in charge of a bunch of stuff. Number two, the skills necessary to be a world-class Senate majority leader are I don't know that Liz Warren possesses those skills. Right. So I would encourage you read The Path to Power. Read the Robert Caro biography of Lyndon B. Johnson. That they're different skills. Like Liz Warren is part of what I love about her is that like the things I love about her are the things that I try and do myself. Right. So she's like super detail oriented. She's super smart. She's like, and so I think she can get that work done as vice president. And also being vice president has the cachet of being perceived as like the next person up. And that means that it's not too late for Liz Warren to be president of the United States. That being said, I think she has almost no chance of being the vice presidential.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's going to be Kamala Harris.
Yeah, I think it's going to be Kamala Harris as well.
Yeah,
I think she has very little chance, but yeah. No, I agree. I want her to be VP just because then she would be president probably because Biden is so old. So that would be my reasoning. Let's see. One more. I got to go be a parent, but one more lightning round here. No, sorry. I was in the wrong spot. Here we go. Simon Templar asks, if Trump actually does lose the election, what are your fears as to what he might do apart from contest the results, which we can all see he's setting up to do, between Election Day and inauguration on January 20th? This is something that has me a bit worried. So, yeah, lame duck, Donald Trump. What are you worried about?
How could Trump, all the stuff he's already doing. How could Trump be any more emboldened than he is right now? Right. Like he is firing inspectors general.
Let me amend this. What about Mitch McConnell? Is there anything he would do in a lame duck knowing he's going to lose power that he wouldn't do if he, you know, if Trump was winning? You know,
like if the question is there a thing that Mitch McConnell wouldn't do? Like, I can't come up with that.
He already would do all the things.
He is already, like, Mitch McConnell is, again, because he's accountable to the voters of Kentucky and vote Amy McGrath, send her some money. That race is close. But you know, he's only accountable to Kentuckians. He has openly said, right? Like, I mean, that's the thing about Mitch McConnell is that, you know, he's kind of got that James Bond villain quality to him of like being willing to monologue if someone asks the right question. But like a Politico journalist was like, if Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies in 2020 and Donald Trump nominates someone to the Supreme Court, will you apply the same rule you used, you know, to block Merrick Garland? And like he laughed and he was like, no, obviously, I'll put somebody on the Supreme Court. Like he has no shame, you know, unlike Justice Roberts, unlike, you know, some other Republicans. There's nothing Mitch McConnell won't do. So what else was in the question?
Well, just what you're worried about in the lame duck, you know, like
I'm worried about the state of our goddamn country. Yeah. And
I'm trying to think if there is anything specifically. I feel like there was something we talked about that we were. I actually think in the lame duck, Trump would start pardoning like crazy. I think he would pardon every crony and himself. That is something that
he's going to do that. He's probably going to do that anyway.
Yeah. But I do. I mean, I guess it depends on how you take the question, but I do think that is a bad thing that will happen during the lame duck in all likelihood. I'm not really worried about the contesting the results, and I'm not really worried about
it. I am not either. I'm glad you've said that. Like,
yeah,
we get that question a lot. And like, look, at the point at which Donald Trump loses the election and holds himself up in the White House and, you know, like, if you're saying that the mechanisms of government are so lost from the top down, and I don't believe that they are, but look, if they are, then this isn't a show, right? Like then the law doesn't matter and we have a coup, right? Like what we have is we have a cranky old idiot in a building that has people with guns. And like,
That's just all of the South to me. All right. Sorry, South, for insulting you, but I, you know, a lot of the people there have earned it. It's not if you're listening, it's not you. Anyway, I'm way out of time. We're over time, but thanks so much for joining us, everybody. That was a lot of fun. Thanks, Andrew, for fielding all the questions.
Yeah,
and Teresa for getting in her first question, as always, and all the patrons. We love you so much. We'll see you.
We love y'all.
Be posting that show, in a day or so until the Tuesday episode. So we'll see you then. Thanks for listening and watching.
Thank you.